I'd like to call this meeting to order. For today is Monday, September 12, 2022. This is the business session of the Board of Directors meeting. Can I get, the time is 6:02. Can I get a roll call, please?
Director Blackham.
Here.
Director Booth.
Here.
Director Frumkeller.
Here.
Director Olson.
Here.
Okay, and with that, can we get stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? And
so is Devin Johnson with us. Devin, come on up. So Devin, why don't we start by you leading us with the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we'll talk a little bit.
Okay.
So go ahead, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we started at our last Board of Education meeting, having a student lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and our principals are coming to introduce staff members, and it looks like Mr. Michaels is running a little bit late. I'm not entirely sure. It's something I'm sure has kept him at the building. And so it's my honor as the interim superintendent of the school district to introduce Devin Johnson to everybody. So Devin is a student at Eagleview, because my child goes to Eagleview and EMS. But at Elizabeth Middle School. So Devin, tell us a little bit about yourself. What grade are you?
I'm in eighth grade. I run cross country. So fun.
Excellent. And so you're currently running cross country because it's the season.
Yeah.
Yeah? When's the next meet?
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday? Where at?
That is a good question. It's either at Timberview Middle School or at TSA.
I think it's Challenger.
Oh. Okay. So what do you enjoy being a student about Elizabeth Middle School the best?
All the teachers are really helpful, and you can go to them and feel like you can ask them questions where some other places are like, oh, okay. And it's just a great community to be in. And Mr. Michael is a great principal, and it just offers so much after-school activities that you can do, and it keeps you involved during the year.
And now that you're an eighth grader, so you'll be moving on to high school next year. So when you leave the middle school, what is one thing, you can only choose one, so what is one thing you would want to make sure that doesn't change at all, that we make sure to preserve?
The teachers? I like being around teachers, people in general.
I hear you. Okay, well, I'd like to have Director Frumkeller come on up, and thank you for... Oh, hold on, Devin.
Thank you so very much. You represented the school very well, and we'd like to give this to you. And thank you very much.
And can I have Kennedy join me up here, please? Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm good, thank you. So, Board of Education Director Frumkeller, I'd like to introduce Kennedy, and how do you say your last name, Kennedy?
Contreras,
who is an EMS student who won the title of the Albert County Princess at the County Fair. Tell us a little bit about the County Fair and what you did to contribute to the County Fair.
So, basically, I had to run to get in this position. And running was super fun too. I got to experience a whole bunch of great judges, and I got to have lunch with them. I got to basically compete for this title, and I mean, I was the only competitor for my princess, so I won. but it was amazing, and I get to work all year with my Albert County Fair Queen, Eliza Roden, and my Albert County Fair Junior Princess, Kinley Cornell. And so I'm looking forward to an amazing year and just going to different events and representing my fair.
Is there an event that you're most looking forward to?
The tricky one. They're all so much fun, though. I like Cheyenne Frontier Days. Oh, yeah. That seems like a lot of fun to go to and just see, like, everyone there. But they all seem like a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, does anyone else from the Board of Education have any questions for Kennedy and her experience?
What's the one thing you're nervous about for this position?
It's a hard one. Probably being late. I know that's like kind of an odd one, but because I love to meet new people, I love to meet adults, I am a very social person, and I love to talk. So but being late, just getting ready on time and making sure I get there on time is probably going to be my biggest thing I'm nervous about.
That's good. Director Blackham, did you have a question?
So what has helped you from school to being a princess?
The social side of it, that's for sure. Because the teachers, they really like to engage with you. They really like to talk to you, and they want to get to know you, like, on who you are as a person. And all the teachers at EMS are great. And Mrs. Brown and Mr. Michael, they love to talk to you. They love to talk to you. During passing period, they'll be like, hey, what's up? So they just love to talk to you, and it's amazing. And so being here at Royalty, you have to communicate with people. And so that's how they both contribute towards each other.
Well, thank you for being with us.
Yes.
Director Fallfeller.
I'd like to first say, in recognition of the exceptional dedication and hard work you have invested in earning the title of the 2023 Elbert County Fair Princess. As an outstanding student at Elizabeth Middle School, a youth representative for Elbert County, and an ambassador for agriculture and the Western ways of life, you and your accomplishments are sources of pride for your school and community, and you have represented the profile of a graduate to a T. And we thank you so very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And you get a fun one, too.
Yay!
Add that to your collection, right? And then here's a certificate from. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, let me throw one more thing at you. Thank you.
Hey, next, if I could have Ms. Montero come on up.
Okay.
Help me introduce
myself.
Our next group.
Yeah. I was just coming to support you. Reappoint her.
Oh, goodness.
Yep.
Okay.
That shows me for coming.
No.
If you want to just introduce their names, and that they're obviously they're from Singing Hills.
Okay, so I know that our STEAM camp representatives or teachers are being recognized, and three of my wonderful teachers are being recognized. And so if I could have Susan McMullen and Ashley Johnson and Jessica Schmidt come up here. You're not going to make me do this alone.
Is Brandon here?
Yes.
Is Brandon, you want to come up too?
Yep.
So Brandon Whitaker from Elizabeth Middle School. I'm just going to start saying you. Okay, so we are here to speak with the board and present on the STEAM camp.
We were presenting. We were just, I thought, understood we were just...
Prepared.
That is right?
Okay.
Can you
yes.
Okay,
I'm going to read.
Okay.
Okay.
Didn't have
a presentation.
I'm sorry.
You can read it. As an exceptional member of the Elizabeth School District faculty for helping to organize and staff the annual STEAM camp for students in grades 3-8 at Singing Hills Elementary School during summer break, and for your above and beyond efforts to provide supplemental educational experiences for dozens of gifted students each year and give them opportunities to advance their knowledge in science, technology, engineering, art, and math. The Elizabeth School District Board of Directors commends you for embodying the district's motto. Students truly are at the heart of everything you do. And we thank you so very much for all that you guys have done.
You got to welcome us. Okay?
Welcome us.
Thank you so much.
And this is for you as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll shake your hand. And I'll
give you this as well.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Appreciate it greatly.
Thank you. For you as well.
Thank you.
Best mug for last. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll slide back over.
Oh, wait, we gotta do a picture. Wait, you gotta wait, Brandon.
One, two, three, and one, two, three. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And last but not least, we'd like to invite Derek from our high school up here. Is Derek here? Fantastic.
Sure.
Derek, and I want to make sure to pronounce your last name correctly. Is it Spawn?
Spawn, correct.
Spawn, thank you. So Derek is a teacher at Elizabeth High School, and he teaches in the automotive program. I believe you joined us from Ponderosa High School previously.
Correct.
And I think you taught for 4 years.
Also
at Ponderosa.
Correct.
So, and prior to that, if I remember correctly, Derek has been very well accomplished in the automotive industry as an automotive repair tech, a foreman, a diagnostician, and an ASE certified master technician as well.
Yes, sir.
So, if you would please help me to welcome Derek here, where he's going to share a little bit about the high school automotive program. Derek.
All right. Forgive me, I'm not used to speaking in front of adults, kids. First off, I want to thank Mr. Dallas, board members, community for the invitation here. This means a lot to me. This is a big deal for me. It's a passion of mine to be able to be in front of so many kids and start a new program from the ground up. I learned a lot at Ponderosa High School, and it was because of Mr. McClendon. Mrs. Cook, Miss Leanne Cook, who's I think she's officially retired now.
Yes.
We'll find
officially.
Out. Pops back up. They brought me here. I came here because of them. The program is new this year. We have a great start. We're working out of a modular building. I have 144 kids come through my classroom every Wednesday, and I couldn't be happier. That was actually my request. As many kids as possible. The goal of the program is truly to create an alternate path. College is not for every student, and it sometimes gets watered down. We get worried about what it is, what it is that is success, and success looks different for every student. And I want to find that success point for every student in the classroom, whether it be college. Well, we have some professionals to get us there. We want to connect students with trade schools. We want to connect students with employers. There's no longer the need to have someone go spend 2 to 3 years sometimes in a trade school and then degree program and then go to an employer. A lot of employers had met the need by having an apprenticeship program right in their doorstep, and that's truly important. Also, military opportunities, which we know Elizabeth has a strong background with that of supporting the military. Sometimes students in my class, I found from past experience, they get nervous when a presenter comes. They're in uniform, and they may not understand what all the military can offer, what a trade school can offer, what an employer can offer. So by bringing them into the classroom, inviting them to talk with the students and get make a connection with the students, they sometimes become more comfortable. I want to invite you all to our car show on September 17th. That's just this coming Saturday. It should be a great event. I'm still a little bit nervous. I'll admit, coming from my background at Ponderosa, we would throw a car show. It's student run each year, as will this year be. And generally, 200, maybe 300 people come through. They show their cars. They have a great time. I'm worried that we're going to have more than we can handle, but we're going to find out. I regret not doing a sign up. So if you're stuck in traffic on Saturday, my name's Derek Spawn. I am at fault. it's an open house. We want to invite the community to come see what we're doing. We want board members, community members, anyone to come by and see what we're doing. If you have ideas, please, we welcome them. Like Mr. Dallas said, I'm a mechanic, technician. I'm still working my way into education. So it's nice to hear what I'm doing well, but constructive criticism, gosh, I welcome that. I really do. We'll also be doing some fundraiser. Our program is and can be quite expensive to run, so allowing people within the community to come in and say, "Hey, I'd like to support you," means an awful lot to us, and hopefully takes a load off of the school district's budget. And finally, going forward, our goal is to become state approved, so that we can get state Perkins funding and federal, state CDF funds and federal Perkins funds to help offset some of that startup cost. We also want to be NATEF, which is the ASC Education Foundation. ASC stands for Automotive Service Excellence. It's a term that's become a little bit watered down lately. But they have an excellent curriculum that allows us to meet all eight areas of ASC Education Foundation curricula. And it is a benefit to students. They can sometimes walk out of high school with the entry-level certifications that are offered at a lot of trade schools. So if we can meet that early, get them that head start within high school to think about trade school or employment afterwards, I think we're doing the right thing. So rather than bore you with a bunch of nomenclature and automotive stuff, if there's any questions, I welcome them. I'm here to answer. Yes, ma'am.
What time is the car show on Saturday?
Car show's at the high school from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Food trucks, right?
Hopefully more than just the two we have now.
If you want to know the food truck, let me know.
right now we have Kona Ice, and we'll have something smoke barbecue.
Okay.
Yes. Smoky Trail Barbecue. I think we spent them Saturday trying to book them. We also have trade schools. We have five different trade schools, ranging from mostly automotive, but also aeronautics and technology, Spartan College. They're out of Broomfield. And the idea here is to bring together families and trade schools. Not often are trade schools fully understood. Most are for-profit, and that can be kind of a negative stigma. So if we can allow students and their families to interact with the trade school field reps that are talking to their students within class time, it may break some of those barriers and allow us to better make decisions, or those families to make a better decision for the student's future. Yeah. Any other questions?
Awesome. I think it's great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Actually, I did have a question.
Please,
so,
yes, ma'am.
What kind of class is? Are you teaching a? Or are you going to be teaching at some point, like a basics automotive class for like just somebody knowing how to change a tire,
yes,
check their oil, all that good stuff?
Great question. Absolutely, we're teaching it now. Of the seven classes I'm teaching each block, one of them is automotive, we call it consumer auto,
yeah,
and it's designed just for that. It's we've gone through how to identify your vehicle by make, model, and year, and use the vehicle emissions control information label. There was more interest in the Automotive 1 series, which will be scaled up 1 through 4 once I get 4 years in. But that consumer grade has become helpful in the past because not every student wants to get in and get their hands dirty, and I respect that. So the consumer auto class is just that. We'll be doing common roadside emergencies, how to change a flat tire. We already have three donated cars, and we'll have a few more coming along. And with those cars, the students get to understand how to safely use the jack, how to jumpstart the car the correct way. And a lot of times, just getting your hands on, it will help build the confidence for those students. Good.
How are you doing all that in that unit that you guys are on?
The cars are parked behind the modular classroom, and during the day, we pull the cars around into the bus drop-off area, and then we have toolboxes on wheels, we have jacks and jack stands, trying to keep the labs to a minimum, or not to a minimum, but to a basic level, because we have a startup program. And then about 10 minutes to 3 each day in the last period of the day, we'll put all the toys away, let the buses come in. And to be honest, a lot of us, there's been talk about buildings and, you know, oh gosh, we're sorry that you don't have a building yet. I'm not. Many young people, for as long as I can remember, we got started in our garage. We got started in our driveway. And when it's hot outside, well, it's hot there. When it's cold outside, it's cold there. I think that starts.
You don't change a tire usually inside. It's outside.
Well said. So I don't see it as a negative. I see it as, within that first year, the ability to build the culture of hard work and work ethic. So I haven't had any students complain. In fact, we just finished floor jack training on Friday of last week. You may have seen a bunch of kids jacking up and lowering cars. The objective was to safely use the jack, of course, and we talked about, you know, all the items to go with it, but to create some investment, the kids would have to jack up the car high enough that they could fit a soda can or a piece of cylinder of paper underneath it, and set the car gently on top of the can or paper without smashing, smushing it.
Okay, nice.
And a lot of kids did really well. Some got frustrated, and we learned perseverance.
You're fine.
And I'll tell you, at the end, it was just a pancake city. Wonderful question. Thank you.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so very much. Anybody else got questions?
Okay.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Swan. Thank you.
So just a quick break. This is something that we are engaging more in at the beginning of our board meetings, but there is this slightly awkward moment where people who have been invited are wondering, do they need to stay for the entire meeting?
Yes.
You don't. Yes, you are welcome to, but we do not have any preconceived notion that you're going to stay for the rest of the meeting. So for any of our students or staff who were just, you know, able to join us, we thank you for your time and for your opportunity to be recognized, and thank you for all you're doing to make Elizabeth School District a great place for everyone. So we just want to make sure you know you are welcome to stay, but you are also welcome to head out for other evening, other events today.
Congratulations.
Of course, thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I get a motion for the approval of the amended agenda, which was to remove policy DEA from 10.2 and to move it to 10.51, first reading new policy?
So moved.
I'm just looking. Sorry. We just moved it down that line.
Yes, was it a revised policy?
It was a new policy.
It was a new one?
Oh, okay.
I just moved it.
Second.
Okay, can I get roll call, please?
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Grumpeller?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Okay, 6.0, can I get a motion for the approval of the minutes? From the BOE meeting, August 22nd, 2022?
So moved.
Second.
Can I get roll call, please?
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Crumpeller?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay, now we'll move on to communications and we'll start.
Hi, everybody. I've got a pretty brief, I'm sure you're disappointed, but a brief presentation tonight. I just want to kind of let you know where I am and what's been happening in the HR world here in the district. It's been a frenzy of a summer. I mentioned to you, I may have my 10 years here, and I haven't seen anything in terms of some of the challenges that we've had in filling positions. And I think if you watch the news or read the newspaper, you can see that it's not unique to our district. But I've been spending my time since people have gotten back to school, students have come in, kind of cleaning up from the mess of the summer and just the frenzy more than anything, and have caught up pretty well. I'm doing a lot of criminal backgrounds of our new classified staff that come in. We do criminal backgrounds of each one of them. I'm doing some onboarding of new employees as they're being hired, but we're pretty much where we need to be. There's a few spots in the district where we still have some people to hire, but it's not
Can
a large number.
Elaborate on that. What positions we still need?
We're in the process of hiring a mechanic for transportation, and I don't know exactly where we are with that. Are you familiar, Ron?
Last direction I gave, or I talked with Mark on, was to go ahead and offer, you know, talk to him, mm-hmm. and you know, get his feel, you know, a salary offer, because all the references checked out.
Yeah, we did have one teacher that started. She was a brand new teacher, not just to our district, but just in general, and just said, "It's not for me." So we recruiting as an elementary school teacher. We're recruiting over there. So just kind of those, some of those spot positions, most of the others are filled. In terms of classified, we can always use more special education paras, so we're focusing on that. And I'm hiring a lot of substitutes. In fact, I had that cover sheet, that memo that's in the packet at the meeting. In terms of new subs that are coming on, but hiring sub teachers more than any right now, and then really focusing now on sub paraprofessionals because we need those too.
What about bus drivers?
Bus drivers we do have a need for additional bus drivers. I will have to compliment Mark Russell. He has hired, I think, 4, maybe even working on the 5th bus driver. So that is huge, but we still have maybe 3 or 4 left that we want to hire.
Okay.
But they're very, I like to talk about my 10 years here and make comparisons, but this is, they're the best recruiters in terms of transportation staff in my time here. They do a very good job of attracting people over, working with them. In terms of coming on board with us and so forth. So
we got to the point where we're at least full enough where we don't have to have kids riding on buses for an hour and a half.
I don't know that the routes have changed. Again, Ron, you may know a little bit more about that. I don't know that the routes have changed back yet. I think what I heard Mark say that if as we hire more, we'll be able to make some changes. Yeah.
So the issue with bus drivers, unless they've got some extensive background driving kids, school buses, it takes at least a month for them to get up to speed. There's training with CDL. There's a lot of CDL training. They have to pass the DOT physical. They have to pass the CDL test. And then we have about 3 weeks for people who've never done it of training at the high school parking lot, basically. Where they learn the basics there, and then they take them out on the road. So they also have to pass their your beginner's license. It's your learning permit what they have also. So they have to also pass that exam, and then they can start learning how to drive on the road too.
Okay.
So it takes at least a good month. Once we, from the time we hire them until they're on a route.
And do we have enough for our sports?
No, I don't believe we do. I don't believe we do. I think there's, we've had to have carpooling in some instances, particularly at the middle school. We have to rely on carpooling.
Well, at least we get that option, don't we?
Yeah.
So that parents can always carpool.
And we are heading in a positive direction in terms of hiring bus drivers. Like I said, we've got 4 or 5 to the one time since the beginning. That's unheard of in my time here. I believe that staff there at transportation will continue on this path. They're really doing a good job. One other thing I wanted to say before, and he's not here now, so I won't embarrass him. Obviously, you could see the type of person that Derek Spahn is. He was an incredible find. And you can see it in how passionate he is about what he's doing. And to have that program off the ground now and developing is going to be great for some of our students that have their sights set on something other than college. And he is the right guy, and he's just a wonderful guy. And I just wanted to say a little bit about it because it's like one of our crowning achievements for this year in our hiring. So
he said he had 144 students.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, offering that? Oh, my gosh.
You know, we also have, as you know, up and running is our certified nurse assistant program that's doing really, really well.
Are they certified yet? Are they?
This will be the first class.
They'll be coming out. Yeah.
Great.
Exactly. That's awesome. So we're actually, kids are being coming out with the certification.
Absolutely.
It's really something, most of the hiring that I'm doing or the recruiting right now is for our classified staff, although we don't have a huge number of positions to fill. The competition that we have with other school districts and the reduction in the pool of candidates is a challenge not just for our school district, but for all the school districts. And so that's going to be a continuing challenge for us. I don't expect this to get better anytime soon. So one of the what we need to do is we can't just do make one effort and do one new thing. There's a multi-pronged approach to trying to recruit and retain employees. And one of the things that we found has been helpful to us, but that we want to use more often, is the stipends, the hard-to-fill stipends have been helpful to us. And given that as much as we've done over the years to increase our salaries for our teachers and our special services providers, we're still not competitive. That's just a fact. That's just a fact. So one of the things that we're going to be doing is increasing the maximum stipend for selected recruitments and selected position from the current 4,000 to 5,000. And we think that could help us. I mean, we're starting to get into the ball game there. And what it does is it supplements our base salaries and allows us to bring in some people that maybe we hadn't otherwise. And Bill, I don't know if you want to chime in on that at all.
No, I mean, I mentioned it at our last board meeting that Kim was taking a look at it and potentially doing to recommend or announce that we're going to be helping that for some select positions.
Yeah.
So the board had previously voted to provide with Kim the opportunity to do so, but we needed to inform you all of the increase to the limit.
And again, it's for selected positions, and they're positions like, and you won't be surprised to hear, there's our special education teachers, our special services providers, our math and science teachers, and then once in a while there'll be a position member for some reason are having extreme difficulty. We're having more trouble hiring new English teachers now than we ever had. Social studies teachers, elementary school teachers. So those are real challenges for us. And I've got to compliment the hard work of the principals this summer in getting their schools close to fully staffed, and in some cases fully staffed already. So, so that's it. That's all I wanted to say. Just a little bit about what's been happening and what we're trying to do to keep ourselves competitive and to keep ourselves moving forward, and all based on one thing, and that's having good quality employees in the classrooms for our kids. And that's our goal, of course, all the time. And I think we've done a pretty, I think the principals and the department directors have done a pretty good job. Any other questions?
Do you know offhand how many students we have in the CNA program?
No, but I'll find out, and I will get that to you. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I want to say it's a total of 40, two classes of 20.
And maybe at some point we can have some of those students kind of present what they're seeing in their chosen field and what the experience has been like. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Can I bring something up really quick? You mentioned at the very beginning, Kim, that you're doing background checks. Mm-hmm. But I don't think everybody in this room knows that even our volunteers get background checks.
Yes. A couple things. I'll kind of expand on a little bit. I mentioned our classified employees, and we have them. We have a system where they can go online. They can register with a group that does off-site fingerprinting. They then can choose a date, a time, and a place where they would go to have their fingerprints done. Their fingerprints are taken, and within an hour to 2 hours after their fingerprints are taken, I get an email with the results. And that's for our classified people. For our licensed people, We don't do fingerprints on them. The Colorado Department of Education does as part of the licensing process. So if the Colorado Department of Education, who have some pretty strict guidelines, pass them on their fingerprints, then we have a lot of confidence that they're okay to be in the classroom. And it's worked out very well for us. Now, what Ron was referring to is for volunteers. We have a lot of volunteers that come primarily in the two elementary schools, but the other two schools, we have some few volunteers. There's a form that I send out to them and ask them to give us some information, including their full name, their social security number, their date of birth. I can then go on the Colorado Bureau of Investigation website and do an instant check on them. I get that back right away. It takes maybe 2 minutes to do one of those. And then I keep those on file so that we know. And there have been some that we haven't allowed to volunteer in the past for various reasons. That all works out really well.
So is that new?
I've been doing that for about 5 years now. Yeah, because the first couple of years I was here, I realized, well, these volunteers, we're not screening them in terms of who's coming into our buildings. And I think it's actually been more than 5 years now. It's worked out very well. And fortunately, there's very few people we've had to deny their ability to volunteer. Yeah.
We don't do that for board members, though.
No.
Why?
To my knowledge, we've never.
Not that I've seen. I
can do it.
Great.
To my knowledge, we've never done that here. Doesn't mean, and frankly, I never expected that we would. I don't remember.
It might be a nice policy to put in place just going forward because we're in and out of schools. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point there. I mean,
I would be happy to do that if the board members.
Well, you might want to wait until I'm done. With my tarp on. So pain.
That might be something we look at putting into the public.
Well, and you got to see where it might come from, because it's an elected position.
I think we would probably want to talk to our legal counsel to make sure that we know what we're doing, and just as you said, Rhonda, if that's something that's
elected official,
something we can do.
Yeah,
so,
you might not be able to.
When you guys sign up, though, to run,
right?
What you sign attests that you've not been convicted of certain charges.
Do they? True. They then check us? Mm-hmm.
I don't think they run a background check, but you're certifying that you haven't been charged with it. But I think that they can't run it because of the background. Because that was actually one of the questions I had when we went through the election process this last year. I forget what year we're in.
So okay.
So, but I can follow up with Melissa and get more clarification.
It would be interesting to know. I mean, just going forward, sure. But that does make a good point that you are in schools, you are in kids.
Right. So,
but we're also elected positions. So it would be nice to know.
Yep.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have our technology update with Marty.
Yep.
I have a presentation for you, and it's not this nice nature slide.
That was very peaceful to watch, though. I like the polar bears.
Sure. Yeah.
Some things out
there. So, this is the time of year. Yes. So every year I do a tech survey. One of the things that I started years ago when I first came in here, I took a baseline kind of survey when I was first hired. So I was hired in July of 2014. So around September of that year, I created a survey, things that I've used before in the past, and got all of our staff to take that, most of our staff. And so every year in May, I do the same survey. We change up the questions a little bit, depending. There's obviously technology changes from year to year. So some of the questions that I have asked 8 years ago, I don't ask anymore. And so usually around this time of this school year, I like to present to the board the results of last May's tech survey as compared to either our baselines, last year's, or maybe some other significant a data point. And so the survey is actually 29 questions, 20 of them. So if you exclude all the questions about what building you work in, what grade, etc., if you exclude the open-ended questions, we have 20 essential questions essentially split up between these these categories. So one is instruction and delivery, one is student collaboration and engagement, one is assessment, another one is professional practice, and then the last one is technology conditions. Technology conditions are the last set of questions that I use to gauge as kind of an accountability tool for myself and for my staff on where we're going in terms of technology. Ask questions like, what do you think of the device that's been given to you? Do you think we have enough computers for our students to use? Do you think our internet is reliable, et cetera? And so I'm not gonna give you all 20 questions. I don't believe I emailed you, but tomorrow morning I'll email you all the questions of the survey so you can take a look at it. And so I just pull out, these are the same questions I pull out every year when I do this presentation, a few key data points and questions that I like to present to the board. So here's how many responded. So that when we first did this survey, you can see how many responses, how many teachers, the year before in 2021, and then the year after, which was last year. So I wanted to show this to show how many people actually responded. I think that 158 was our highest total responses that we got. And please stop me if you have any questions about any of this stuff as we go on. So one of the questions I asked, which probably I don't need to ask anymore, but one of the first questions I asked back in 2014 was importance of technology use for your instruction. From 0 to 10, 0 is not meaningful, 5 is meaningful, but you don't see it there, but it says meaningful but essential, and 10 is essential. So back then, you had a lot of people that thought technology was like good, but no, I don't need to use it. So as of May 2021, and I think it would make sense, logical sense, that the graph would move over to the right as technology advances every year, more and more technology is used in the classroom. And so, like I said, I think at some point this can be taken out of my survey because it's like, well, yeah, it's important. It's all. So this was 2021 of May, the importance of technology use in your classroom, and then this was last year's. So again, everything moving over to the right. You know, I would assume that the 1.2% down there are people who don't use technology a lot in the classrooms. So maybe that's performing arts, gym. One of the other things I like to ask is your proficiency level in certain things that we use as a district. I know it's hard to read this, but I want you to kind of zero in on the colors. And so this question allows me to see what type of professional development do we need to work on. So the greens and the blues are beginning and developing. The yellow and the cyan are proficient and advanced. So we want to shrink the green and the blues and expand the yellow and the cyan. And so the things on the left have changed over the years, but I wanted to show you this slide, and the first time I asked this was in 2016, but I did want to show you kind of as we've moved through different types of technologies, what is our proficiency level, and this is self-reporting, so there's no test involved, it's just a teacher answering the question whether they think they're proficient or not in certain things that we use. So in 2021 of May, you can see that yellow and cyan band expanding, and the green and the blues, you know, shrinking, and that's what we want. That's what we want to go for. There's a weird white band that I can get rid of. It's some glitchy thing within my survey, just FYI. And this is how it was last year. So we want to continue to grow some of those things. When I look at this graph, and I see, like, oh, Google Spreadsheets, you know, maybe that's something that we can offer more PD on, or ask our teachers in the schools, hey, would you like to do some more after-school training, or maybe on Thursday late start days, you know, we can come in and do a quick kind of training on how to use Google Sheets. The other question I ask that I started asking, I believe, in May 2020, because of the pandemic, is, what would you like more training in? And so you can see the very top one of that year was remote distance learning. And then what's interesting to see is as we've gone along the last 3 years, what's taken the top spot? Does anybody want to guess what's taken the top spot? I'll show you. It is none. So there are some teachers that feel like they don't need any more training in. I think this is kind of, I always feel like there's always an opportunity to learn different things. So this is one of those things that, while not necessarily concerning, it is kind of a data point that I like to look at. It's like, well, what is it that you know, I don't think that we should ever feel like, oh, I know everything. But there's always room for growth. And so that's how it was in 21 of May. And then last year, same thing again. The top one wasn't that they don't need any more training. And then the last 10 questions, like I said, had to do with technology conditions. We asked questions like, the computer that's assigned to me, it's very important, obviously, that when we have employees come in, that they can depend on their computer. When I first started working here, I found a lot of staff members were bringing in their own personal computers to work with because whatever we provided them wasn't good enough. So that was a goal of mine, to get our staff on a set schedule. So our set schedule is 5 years. Every staff member gets a new computer every 5 years. We figure that that's about the lifespan of good use out of a laptop computer for what you need to do in the classroom. So this was my initial, you could see that, inadequate and below were kind of the majority of the responses. This is in May of 2021, moving over more to the right, which is what we want. And then this is last year. So as we go and ask these questions, obviously every year goes by. If a teacher has a brand new computer, 4 years from now when we ask this question, they have now a brand new computer. So I would assume that they'll start to answer in that other band. But in most cases, I think as long as we continue to have the answers on the right side of the graph, that we're doing good. And then the other question I ask is the computers my student use. That's also an important piece of what our teachers have to do with technology. So this is how it was in 2014. A lot of answers on the left that says that we're not adequate. This is how it was in 2021. And then this is how it was in 2022. This one was important in that it helped us determine what we wanted to use our MLO funds for. So I've asked this question way back in 2014, but I include the 2018 one instead because this was a way for us to know where should our money go for MLO. And when we passed the MLO, one of the things we asked were what should we spend our money on, obviously within the confines of what we said we were going to go out for MLO. And so you can see here, if you add up everything below the enough, so it adds up to over 50%, 50% of our employees thought that we did, our teachers thought that we did not have enough computers for student use. And so this was a big driver in going into that one-on-one program and using the bulk of our MLO funding for that. This is 2021 May. I'm not sure why there's a percentage that thinks that there isn't enough computers, especially since everybody has a computer now. And this was last year. We're still a little bit down in that box. Overall, the existing technology, so this is everything, not just the laptops, all the technology that's in the building. This is how it was in 2014. This is how it was in May of 2021. And then this is how it was in May of 2022. Amount of support for my staff. How much support do we give them? Availability, response times, attentiveness. So here's how it was back in 2014. 2021 of May. More than enough was the most responded. Still more than enough amount of support. So this is a good way for me to say, do we have enough people out there supporting our staff in the classrooms? If those numbers ever go down, I'll be here to ask for more staff. And then this is like quality of service, like what type of service are we providing to you? Obviously very important for us as a service department. And so our goal, again, is to get it over to the right side of things. And you can see from 2021 of May to 2022, there's a little bit of movement going to the left, so I need to figure out where that is and why that is, and that's going to be one of my goals for this year for my staff, is to how to improve it so that we're trending over to the right side of things. And then the last three slides I want to show you is those last 10 questions have to do with technology questions, and the responses are 0, which are negative type responses, to 10, which is like positive. So I asked, like, do you think our internet is fast enough? No, it's too slow. 10, yes, it's super fast. Do you think our internet is reliable? Et cetera, et cetera. And so I aggregate all the data to get kind of a feel to what the where we're at, negatively viewed or positively viewed in terms of technology. So in 2014, you can see that, you know, we were either in a neutral or in the negative areas of the survey in 2021. Again, that's our goal, is to move this over to the right. And then in 2022, some of that banding coming over a little bit to back over to the negative side, that moving to the left. I think that's it. Yeah, that's all I had. I will email you guys tomorrow with a link to all the questions so you can view them all, of all the questions they've asked. Do you have any questions for me at this point?
This is very important.
Of course you
do. I also understand it from behind the scenes, like you just can't make it for the other.
Yeah, and it's, you know, also it gives us an opportunity to get feedback that sometimes we don't get. Like I don't know, one of the times we had a feedback from a teacher that said, I'm always having internet problems, blah, 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 in my quarter or whatever it was. And then I talked to my staff member and I said, do you ever know? I've never heard anything from them. I said, oh, okay. And so then we asked, or I asked the teacher. Now this survey used to be not anonymous. Now I made it anonymous to get more participation. But before, there was, you know, the teacher's name was actually attached to it. And so I asked, well, how come, you know, you answered this and you never, well, I didn't have time to let you guys know. Like, well, you know, you have to let us know so you can, right, so you can fix it.
Right.
But yeah, so I think some of those questions, you know, also, like, when do you get them? When you answer questions, a lot of times, the last problem that happened, you know, 3 days ago is what's on their mind, and so they'll answer the questions kind of based on that. Like, one of the questions this year, one of the comments was, the Chromebooks are really slow to start up or log in, and I've, you know, never had that issue before. And it's like, oh, it's the first I've heard of that issue. So now we get to find out who is that teacher, where's that? Is there a problem with the Wi-Fi in that part of the campus? So, okay, thank you.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you so much, Harry. Okay, for the Chief Financial Officer, Ron.
All right, excuse me. First up, you got checks over $5,000, and as usual, you have most of the expenditure, many of the expenditures are your typical monthly expenses, but there are also some payments for curriculum purchases, sports uniforms, a gym floor refinish, athletic equipment, paint for our sports fields, EHS parking lot repair, safety vehicle, athletic trainer services, conference registration, assessment instructional software, transportation parts, HVAC repair services, at EMS and EHS, like electronic maps, and renewal of a tech license. Any questions?
I have a question. So two that stuck out to me that I just wanted to give a little explanation with. EMS football equipment for $16,000. What kind of equipment are we buying?
I could find out though from Jeff.
Right.
Jeff,
well, and what goes along with that is my second question is, I'm just curious. Children's Hospital for almost $30,000 for annual athletic training services.
So what happens at EHS? We used to have a athletic trainer on staff, mm-hmm. and that was many years ago. And so the athletic trainer, like, athletic director, did a little bit of research, tried to find a better deal, and contacted Children's Hospital. And so the athletic trainer that, even though she's not employed by us, she's there a lot, and she actually works for Children's Hospital. So that's in lieu of having a full-time athletic trainer.
Okay, that makes sense.
We've got, we can hire a contract from Children's Hospital.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about football equipment.
Well, a lot of times you have to circulate in and out because, you know, there's a lifespan on that stuff, and they're very stringent about how long you can use helmets, for example.
Sure.
And so a good helmet can be $150 to $200, just a single helmet. So I'm sure it might have just been one of our cycle of years when we purge. I'm still doing it. We used to. I know.
You can say we.
I'm signing the check.
Right, yes, you are. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. That just
very good development.
And then the other thing is more of a question, Bill, for you, is how come our two elementary schools aren't on the same system. We have iReady and then for Running Creek and Everyday Math for Singing Hills Elementary. That concerns me a little bit because when they come into the middle school, they're not being taught the same way.
Yeah, I think that comes down to historical balance between district consistency and then building level autonomy. And the decisions that principals make for their curriculum, for resources for their individual buildings as well. So I don't have a good answer as to historically how those decisions came about being made, but I believe as though it's that balance between a district-wide decision and that individual school decision, which I share your thoughts and just kind of, I guess, you know, pondering about, do we evenly and equally prepare our students for transitioning beyond elementary school based upon those resources? And that's something that I think as we've started to develop a district-wide department of curriculum and instruction, we can start to have those conversations. But prior to this, we haven't been able to.
Right. And I think that's just because I loved Craig's, you know, what they used to do, which, you know, passing the buck or the child along to the next grade, they'd work with the grade beneath, and so they knew the handoff, what they're teaching, whatever. And so I just didn't know if those two systems are really that different, or...
So I've started collecting that information from all of our schools, and it's right now it's in a Google spreadsheet, so that we, with where we have the electronic resources, clickable links as well, so that we can from two perspectives. One, we can start to begin to collect the different resources that we're using. We can start to look at when are those resources looking to expire, and then how can we maybe, as we move towards the future, have some collaborative discussions around using the same resource where it would make sense. But then also to work with Jason and develop that online department of curriculum to where we can provide better transparency to our public around the resources that we use in our classrooms.
And maybe pull in the 6th and 7th grade math teachers to see what they're seeing coming in. If they're seeing any kind of trends of lacking in certain areas, or if they notice it.
Yeah, those are the sorts of conversations we can have as we start to develop that department of curriculum instruction.
How many people do we receive?
All only existing staff members. Right now it's tying in our gifted and talented resources, or gifted and talented liaisons, or ESL liaisons, and then so their coordinators on each of the different buildings have individual liaisons. At the high school, we have an instructional coach as well, and so it's starting to pull together those existing people. And then curricular chairs at different, whether it be at the high school, middle school, or grade level chairs at the elementary school. One of the things we need to look at is how in the future we can provide opportunities for determining who from those different areas would need to be around the table as we have those discussions, so that we can find the time throughout the year or at the end of the year, beginning of the year, to where the hardest part is getting them together and being able to have those collaborative conversations in place. But when I say Department of Curriculum Instruction, there's no new additional hires.
So it's not a reorg.
No, it's just trying to take the resources that we're already using and start to bring some alignment to them and start to bring start to bring them together so we start to evaluate what we have. But it's not a department where we're adding additional staff members.
Do you foresee getting some parent involvement in there somewhere as far as the curriculum review?
Giving
them some say on the curriculum?
Yeah, I think so. Once we have the opportunity to kind of get our feet underneath ourselves. But whenever we develop new curriculum, I'm a firm believer that we need to have that parent voice. And depending upon the grade level as well, potentially that student voice in the room also. So right now it's about where we're at with that particular department and the development and the implementation of it is really getting our feet under ourselves so that we can get there.
So, Ron, are the supply chain issues getting any better, particularly for food services?
They're getting a little bit better, but there's still issues. But nothing major that I've, we're not buying full trays or full doggy plastic containers that we broke in half last year. We're not having to do that. So we're in a better position than we were last year, but there's still issues. not as severe. It is getting better.
Good.
So.
Paramedic.
Not necessarily directly related to just food, Director Blackham, but we are starting to see some instability in our deliveries for certain things. And so we're looking at how do we potentially just not having drivers to deliver them. And so toilet paper is an example. Not that there's a shortage of toilet paper, but getting them from a warehouse to our facilities, we've had a couple of deliveries that haven't arrived. So I've been working, that came up in our classified advisory committee, and so we're looking at how can we try to order a little bit further ahead, how can we store those items, the items that are available, and that makes sense. Obviously, perishable items, a little bit different story, but so we might be a little bit less, I guess, at the mercy of whether a delivery truck arrives at what point in time. I'm sure we're down to 5 rolls of toilet paper on the bicycle, so we had to do.
We found some today. So
we did find some.
Okay, moving on to, unless there are any more questions? Okay, moving on to the financial statements. These statements are for activity through the end of July. In other words, only 1 month into the new fiscal year. So on a percentage basis, that's 8.3% through the year. General fund revenues after charter allocations stand at 7.5%, while expenditures are slightly over 8%. Since these financial statements, or the financial statements, reflect revenues and expenses for the month of July, there's not a whole lot of activity in the other funds. Some, but not a whole lot. A word of caution, though, these statements, mostly general fund, are on a cash basis, which means there are some revenues and expenses that I'm reported in these statements that will be ultimately accounted for in the prior year after we do the year-end closing. So, just a little heads up, the revenues, you might look at, says we have $400,000 this month and then $300,000 in November or December, something like that. So just a heads up that some things might look goofy down the road. Not now, down the road. So just a little heads up there. Any questions on the financial statements? Okay, well, I'm pretty much done. I've got one more little thing to talk about. And just want to give you a little heads up that a few months ago, or a little while ago, I had a talk with Mr. Schumann about when did he know it's time to retire. So he told me, you'll know. And I know. It's time for me to retire. So just wanted to give you a heads up on what's happening.
Wow. Thanks, sir.
January 3rd.
Yes. We will miss you.
Yes.
Miss this place too. Miss you guys.
I have some big shoes to fill.
Same that big feet.
Yeah. It's gonna be hard to accept.
So it's time. Got a couple of grandkids I want to hang out with a little bit more, and I gotta tell you, living with my 90-year-old father kind of opens my eyes on limitations once you get to that.
Good for you.
So there's lots of things, not lots of things, there's things I want to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's lucky. Yeah, you're lucky you get to see it now. I mean, that this is what your calling is, versus, oh gosh, I wish I would have.
Mm-hmm. And that was a thought in my mind, because I want to hang out. I want to do a lot more gardening. I want to do a lot more work. On this little piece of property down south, and just hang out down there, do things out there. And so I need my physical abilities and keep my mind sharp doing other things, mm-hmm. challenging it. So, time while I have the physical, mental energy to accomplish that.
Why, Bronto, and come join me. The hills are calling.
All right, we'll do it. I'm not so sure about a Bronco, but
okay.
Fair. They bring the Blazer back.
It's just a little. It's probably like.
Might make it happen.
She's a grocery getter now.
Grocery getter.
Well, thank you for all that you've
done. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Absolutely.
Okay, you're grounded. We're not talking to you no more. Right?
Exactly. Can't quit if you can't get out.
It's true. Okay, 7.4, superintendent report.
Yeah, so in your packet, you'll see a few things that I wanted to kind of highlight. But before I get into that, actually, I wanted to just add a little bit of an item that wasn't on the agenda, and just really, if you get a chance when you're around either Running Creek or Singing Hills Elementary Schools and their staff, to really thank them for an amazing back-to-school night on Thursday. Both schools, I felt, had amazing participation, a really great venue. The cloud cover kept it a little bit cool without dumping rain on everybody. So those staffs really did a fantastic job at both the schools. So I just want to give them a real big shout out and thank you for them serving their communities in a positive way. So I wanted to provide with you in the packet, in the board packet, you'll see a document there, a PDF, that says 7.4 EP _RPT Elizabeth SY. So what that is it is a report that you all commissioned in February 14, 2022. So that's about 6 months ago.
Isn't that just a recap? Or we had done this several years ago,
you had done
and they came back in.
Yes. Okay. So you had done it in May of 2018. Okay. And in that report, you not only looked at potential enrollment projections, but you also looked at the what I would call red, yellow, and green status of major components of our existing facilities. Okay. So if we take a look at that, I'd like to draw attention specifically to page 33, where they put in place projected enrollment by school by year. And the reason I want to point that out to you is when we take a look at this, it is trying to look at, we know we have growth in the area when it comes to new homes being built. And the question is constantly, how can we make sure that we're best informed on how the school's enrollment is potentially going to be impacted as a result of that growth? When we take a look at that, I'd like to draw attention specific to Elizabeth Middle School. Well, let's start with Running Creek. Running Creek Elementary School, not looking at the preschools, and Singing Hills. And when you take a look and you start to go across there, you start to see the numbers tick up quite a bit when you start to get around the 2024-2025 time frame. Running Creek would go up, according to this, approximately, 36 students, and Singing Hills Elementary goes up about just under 20 students. And then if you take a look specifically at Elizabeth Middle School, when you go from the 26-27 to the 27-28, you see a pretty substantial uptick in the projected enrollment there. And then as you would expect, and it continues, and then as you would expect with Elizabeth High School, about 3 years after the middle school sees this uptick, you start to see an uptick around between the 29-30 and the 30-31 school year. So the reason I'm pointing this out is it starts to provide us with some good information on when we might start to see rapid increases, or accelerated increases, at least we could say, whether it's rapid or not, accelerated increases in the rate of enrollment change between year to year. If we take a look at the current year, granted this was only back in February, and we're only looking at projections. So if we take a look at Running Creek Elementary School, the projection for this year in February was about 308 students, and where last number I got was 311. So pretty close. Three high. If we take a look at Singing Hills Elementary School, the projection was at 388, and the last number I got for enrollment at Singing Hills was 418, so that's 30 students high. If we took a look at Elizabeth Middle School, projection was 419. We're looking at 433, so 14 students high. Elizabeth High School projection was 684. Current count, last I checked, or last piece of data I have, was at 690, so approximately
6 high. So in all 4 cases of our schools, the current enrollment has outpaced the projection 6 months ago, based on data 6 months ago. So it does call into question when and where and how will those inflection points start to manifest themselves. So I mentioned that because I think we have a lot going on in the district right now when we're trying to evaluate capital needs, when we're trying to evaluate property needs. And with this data, I think it would be really important for us to start looking at a master facilities plan where we start looking at a 3, a 5, a 10-year plan so that we can start to have some strategic and informed decisions around what we're doing with capital improvements, what we're doing when it comes to our real estate development. We're also, at the same time, tomorrow, Ron, Mark Hooser, and myself are meeting with an organization that has been working for the last month and a half to complete a feasibility assessment based on our utilities. Where are utilities currently at in our existing buildings? How can we, because right now, in some cases, as we are replacing lights, we are actually saving the light bulb because we can't get the light bulb anymore. So we're taking used light bulbs and we're setting them aside because we have other light fixtures that can use that light bulb that we can't get right now. And so we're trying to take the enrollment projections, the feasibility plan, and collectively our knowledge of what we have for our real estate and our capital improvement needs and bring that together so that the board can start making some decisions about what do our facilities look like in 3 years, what does it look like in 5 years, what do they look at like in 10 years. And so it's my goal to bring back to you some additional information for our next meeting so that we can start to plan what we want in that master facilities plan. For example, some ideas might be to really make sure, as though I think these are kind of no-brainers, but we need to factor in safety and security, we need to factor in technology infrastructure, we need to factor in grounds as well. Right now, we're under watering restrictions right now. And so just watering grounds, if you haven't noticed, we've gone from about a month ago, we had a lot of pretty green grass around the area. Now it's looking a lot more crunchy and a lot more yellow, and that's because we've only watered 3 days a week. So, there's a couple of components that I think we can factor in there. So I wanted to present you with this information and express my desire for us to work on a master facilities plan and kind of outline that when we come back in 2 weeks. We're planning on bringing some information to you around a listing of our current district-owned properties and where we can maps, some additional enrollment projections, what do you need to know from the feasibility report. And I've also asked this company, Cooperative Learning Strategies, to get us a proposal for building out upon our projections and helping us to guide our work in a master facilities plan. So I just wanted to give you that information, explain kind of why we're looking at it when it comes to these numbers. My experience last time, so I, as most of you do know, I did support and lead and build from the ground up one of the largest middle schools in the state of Colorado. It was a year and a half to 2 years worth of planning, and it was 4 years worth of nonstop construction. So my point in these conversations is any planning that we do for dates, like I threw out there, dates such as 2024, 2025, and 2027, 2028, it's 2022, 2023. When we think about those sorts of timelines that I was just mentioning, those dates can come really quickly. So I just want us to be informed and provide you with the information that you need in order to make informed decisions to help guide our school district.
And how many years ago was that when you were working on that project to develop
this? That started in 2015 and it finished... the last piece of work was done the day before we closed down during the pandemic in 2020. And that work had already been going on for a year before I came on board.
But it took 4 years to build that.
4 years of nonstop construction.
The supply chain was good.
Yes. So it's just important for us to be thinking, like, it's not just a next year sort of conversation. It's when we're thinking 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years down the line, what we talk about now matters in that perspective. So, So it's just helping you to be informed there. Any questions regarding that work that will be hopefully in reach? Okay. Moving on, we did have a safety response protocol that we did need to initiate at Running Creek Elementary School. I believe that was approximately 2 weeks ago. So I don't want to go into great details regarding the after-action report. If people do have some individual questions, I'd be happy to answer those one-on-one when we have some one-on-one meetings. But at the same time, I wanted to kind of highlight that Mr. Newman, our Director of Safety and Security, was made aware of a need to place our elementary school, Running Creek Elementary School, into a secure position due to some dangerous activity that was occurring in the neighborhood. And so he reached out to me, and I believe I communicated with all of you as well. It is one of the, to my knowledge, one of the first times that we've needed to communicate at the level that we did to the community as well. So one of the things we wanted to make sure to do was really make sure we were clear on what secure is, which is secure is where there is a danger outside of the building, not inside of the building. And so the decision was made to keep students inside of the building just to be extra precautious for safety, because at that point in time, the threat was actually mobile, and we police did not have an exact whereabouts for that threat. And it's a good thing we went through with our communications the way we did, because we were then advised to place other buildings in the local area on secure as well, including these buildings and Aspire. And so that went over really well. Mr. Newton has performed a district and school-based after-action report where he found that the staff, especially at Running Creek Elementary School, performed very admirably and did an excellent job. And their principal was returning from a trip out of state. And so oftentimes that's how it happens. The person who trains the most about who's communicating this, who's doing that, who's making sure this isn't appropriate. You know, Murphy's Law, it happens when that individual's not there. And so really wanted to place a big thank you out there and recognize the staff at Running Creek Elementary School and Mr. Newton for the work that he did around the after-action report and the communication between Mr. Newton and the district, and also Elizabeth Police through our school resource office. It was phenomenal as well. We did receive a lot of positive praise from the community. And when it came to our communication with the community, we also found a couple of areas where we had a few issues that we can, you know, do better on in the future. For example, we're limited to the number of characters in some of our communication. When you put Running Creek and not Running Creek Elementary School, some people weren't sure. Is it Running Creek Elementary School? Is it Running Creek Dentistry? You know, those sorts of, like, small thing, you know, communication things that we can just improve upon. But a couple of big takeaways were the partnership with EPD and our SRO was a highlight. Our SRO did a great job of initiating the need to move to a secure and communicating directly with the district through Mr. Newton. Once we finish with programming of radios, it'll help communication drastically, because Mr. Newton was working on texting here, calling here, answering a phone call there, and radios will help bring everybody onto the same channel, communicate the same message effectively and efficiently. It was important that we had discussed the likelihood at the beginning of the year with the all staff welcome back, that just because one building may need to implement a safety response protocol doesn't mean that it might not influence other buildings. And in this case, Mr. Newton had to communicate with transportation, because it happened right as we were having preschool PM students be dropped off. So, you know, just a number of things that you've got to process through in real time there. So our staff did an excellent job. And thank you to everybody who was involved there. So besides that, any other questions regarding the secure at Running Creek Elementary School? Okay. Again, if you have some other questions, I'm happy to answer those one-on-one. I did share with you the district performance frameworks and school performance frameworks in an earlier communication to the board. A couple of things I want to keep in mind. We haven't had school or district performance frameworks since 2019 due to the pandemic. So this is the first year that we've had those. They are preliminary reports, so they won't be locked in until sometime around October, November timeframe, depending upon whether or not schools submit for reconsideration. And we are evaluating right now whether one of our schools will submit for reconsideration based on local data. This data is based, so for elementary schools middle schools, excuse me, the data is based 60% off of the growth data for students on CMAS only, and 40% off the achievement data for students on CMAS only. So it doesn't take into account kindergarten, first grade, second grade, because they don't take CMAS. The growth data is also a bit precarious, in my opinion, because the years prior to last year, students only took one assessment in a grade level, and it rotated ELA math, ELA math, ELA math, and that was just due to the pandemic at that time as well. So they're really good for us to take a look at and see as a stagnant point in time for one test and for us to make some decisions as to how do we move forward. But I will say that and share with you that the district did maintain its accreditation status that it's had now for many years. We're really thankful for that and proud of that. But it helps us to create a holistic picture of what's happening in our schools so that we, in districts, that we can, you know, plan to move forward and effectively to help shore kids up and get them achieving at the highest level we can. And that's all I have for you today.
So does the... Do these assessments, do those tie into like the CDE assessment site where you can see their performance?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Same thing. I didn't mention at the high school it is based upon it's based upon an achievement, growth, and post secondary workforce readiness and factors in this mass and PSAT.
Okay.
That's all I have. I went over that with the, when I lumped that together with the enrollment information. So yes, and it should say the 26th. It looks like that might just be a typo, but that's where in our working session I'll bring back a list of district-owned properties, maps where possible enrollment projections, and continue to work on what do you all feel as though you need in order to have informed conversations moving forward on what a 3-5-year
Okay. Any questions, you guys?
We have no public comment. So we will move to 9.0. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda items 9.1 through 9.6?
So moved.
Second. May I have roll call, please?
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Farfelli?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Okay, can we move to action items for 10.1? Can I get a motion to approve the first and final reading of the revised policy ACE 1, non-discrimination equal opportunity exhibit?
So I have questions about a few of these.
We need to have a motion for it first, and then a second, and then the decision.
And right now, we're only looking at first and final reading of ACE-1.
Right. I just have a super
question. That's my question.
Oh, okay.
So I need a motion.
Second.
Okay.
Discussion.
Okay.
I just wonder why, instead of having to change it every time, can we just say district nurse?
So that was one of the things that we've talked about. We need to follow up with legal on that, because there was a situation a while ago where it was something referring to HR. And do you remember this? When we changed the HR, it was instead of saying Ken Schumann, that we were just going to change it as a blanket change, so that if down the road we were going to have positions or people leaving the position, so we could just make it blanket. But we need to follow up with legal first to make sure that we are able to do that, because one of the questions that I think it was is that we need to have an acting email address for that position. So we're going to come back to that at another time, and then hopefully if we get our answer that is the way we're going to go, then we'll have a lot of policies that will be changing, because we have a lot of policies that refer to a specific person instead of the department, basically.
The only question about that, I was just trying to make it easier.
No, but that was, I had the same thing today, too, so. Okay.
Then I had a question on the next one. GDE, GDF, dash.
Okay, so let's finish up with this 10.1 for the first and final reading of just the ACE 1. Your discussion was good? Okay, anybody else have any questions pertaining to this one? Okay, may I have roll call, please?
Dr. Blackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Farmfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Olson?
Aye.
Okay, so now moving on to 10.2, can I get a motion to approve the first reading of the revised policies JLCB, immunization of students, JLCB-R, immunization of students regulations, GDE/GDF-R, support staff recruiting,
hiring regulation.
We moved the DEA.
The DEA was
all right. Yeah, it could have been modified to turn it.
Well,
I need
to look two different things.
Oh.
So
you were struck.
Oh, okay. So this is specifically about the immunizations?
Mm-hmm. It's about the immunization of students, the immunization of students regulation, and the support staff hiring recruiting regulation. At a review, we realized that the funds from local tax sources is not a revised policy, it's a new policy. And so right here, it would have been grouped under revised policy. So it's
and I haven't uploaded the amendment. And
so
it's just moved further down.
Okay.
So right now, it's only JLCB, JLCBR, and GDE/GDF-R.
Yes.
Okay,
so...
Good, but we need to have a motion for it.
Okay.
Can I have a motion for the group? So moved.
Second.
Okay. Now let's go into the
okay. So the immunization of students.
Yes.
I guess my question is, why are we changing it? Why is there a need to change it?
There's a lot of changes.
Correct.
I mean, so
what was in there before worked? Why is this a new law that came down that says that we have to change this?
So this is what was provided by the CASB. And I will say, for one of the things that I was questioned about, and I'm not cutting you off on your question, but if this overlaps, was with the religious exemption. Mm-hmm. And that's where I printed these forms for y'all, mm-hmm. because I looked it up to see why are we pulling that out, because mm-hmm. I was bothered by that. But on the certificate of non-medical exemption, it states on the top here, I didn't have time to highlight everybody's, but it says non-medical exemption means, it's like the fifth or sixth sentence down, means an immunization exemption based upon a religious belief whose teachings are opposed to immunizations. And so you can see that on that one.
Okay.
So I was questioned about this too, mm-hmm. as to why we are removing the religious exemption, and maybe you have further questions on it, but looking at... I mean, CASB recommended for us to remove this, mm-hmm. and then looking at what the certificate still stands, I mean, it still stands that...
It still stands?
Correct.
Are parents going to take the time to go and look through this, or is it better to have that option for a religious exemption?
But here's my question, is why did they, what's the reason to change it?
Yeah.
It's because, my belief, from what I understand, is it's because the non-medical exemption and the exemption due to religious and personal beliefs are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just on that form, it's technically called the non-medical exemption.
But there was somewhere in here where it says in the red that they then have to
provide the document. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the document is called non-medical exemption.
Right, which is
however,
this one.
we don't say that in the old wording, do we? Which means you're taking that document and sending it to somebody else.
So the way that the old document would read, are you talking about JLCBR page 1 down at the bottom?
Paragraph 3.
Well,
do you want a hard copy?
Maybe. I guess I still question if the law hasn't changed, why are we changing this? I don't like this. It says you have to complete an online education module. That people in our district are not going to be happy with that.
Well, it says it must submit either a completed certificate of completion of the online education module administered by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, or a completed certificate of non-medical exemption that is signed by a parent, guardian, or emancipated student for the physician qualified physician assistant or advanced practice nurse. And that's where this form is.
Right. And I get that, but why are we even adopting this? I mean, if the law didn't change, why are we changing the verbiage?
And then we're adding suspension, expulsion on the immunization of students, the JLCB.
on towards the bottom, we're adding in suspension or expulsion school according to the regulations. And we're, this is a huge, you know, I get it if they're coming down and they're making us, but just because CASB says it.
Having like immunization isn't actually like a new component for schools.
No, I get that.
And so what this is, what is happening though is, I would say, a higher level of scrutiny on whether or not districts either have 100% immunization, or when you take the percentage of immunization and then you add the individuals who have opted out of the immunization, that you have the proper documentation in place to say, okay, 8 individuals have received immunization, 2 have not, and those that have not are due to a non-medical exemption, or 1 is due to a non-medical exemption, and 1 may have chosen to complete the Colorado Department of Public Health Environment Online Certificate.
But is this mandatory? Is this required?
That's what I'm asking.
It has been for a long time for school districts to get to 100% immunization.
It's been right. Well.
Well, I know that's the goal, but tracking
the information?
To my knowledge, yes, it has. It's just one of those things that has not, across the state, had a very high level of scrutiny on whether or not districts have gotten there. Mm-hmm. And now that there is a higher level of scrutiny on whether or not districts are getting there. So JBCB, or JLCB, the immunization of students. So the description of the updates that are provided by CASB is that it's substantive and technical update to reflect the reporting requirements and changes to the exemption process set forth by Senate Bill 20-163. I can say that again. I see a couple people taking notes. So it's due to the changes that have been set forth by Senate Bill 20-163. And
so that's 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2020. And then JLCB-R is the regulation. It's the same thing. It's in regards to the exemption reporting requirements and changes to the exemption process set forth by Senate Bill 20-116.
I guess my whole thing is, if it's basically saying the same thing, why change it?
Well, I don't think that it is saying 100% the same thing. If we take a look at like page 1, down where there's been a lot of conversation.
Dash R?
Yes. Okay. Where there's been quite a bit of conversation around number 3, parents and guardians or emancipated students who assert. It would have said, currently it says students and guardians or emancipated students who assert an exemption from immunization based on a religious or personal belief, a non-medical exemption shall submit the required exemption form to the school on an annual basis. Such submission shall occur at the beginning of each school year that the non-medical exemption is asserted. So it doesn't even provide for the option to complete the online manual. Either you have documentation to show that you've received the immunization, or you complete the non-medical exemption. If we were to make this change, it would say parents/guardians or emancipated students who assert a non-medical exemption must submit either a completed certificate of completion of the online education module administered by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, or a completed certificate of non-medical exemption that is signed by a parent or guardian or emancipated student and a physician qualified, physician assistant, or advanced practice nurse on an annual basis. Such submission will occur at the beginning of each school year that the non-medical exemption is asserted. So the differences in those two languages are, currently it's non-medical exemption only. Now it would be non-medical, if we were to make these changes, it would be non-medical exemption or to complete the certification of the online module and have that signed off by, looks like a qualified physician's assistant or an advanced practice nurse. So that particular paragraph is increasing the number of ways in which a family could show or reach what the state would qualify as being able to check the box that you meet the qualifications. positions for immunization.
I just don't think anybody is looking for additional ways. Like, there's just too much changes. Like,
I don't know Elizabeth's historic rate on this, but I do know that most of a high number of districts in the state of Colorado have not reached 100% immunization rates. But again, it's not that it would be immunization or what would be considered immunization by opting out. Most districts haven't gotten it.
Okay.
So the collection of the information has been problematic for districts, especially as you get larger. Getting the information back has been problematic. So. But in your conversations, it would be good to know, you know, the specific parts of either of these, and we can research them. And this is just the first read. We can research them and bring them back. So what I'm hearing is, number one, more clarification on why the change to begin with.
Yeah.
So one is why the change to begin with.
I mean, have we ever actually had somebody say, I'd like an additional way to opt out of this?
I'll see what I can find out about. I'll see what I can find out about our immunization rates previously. What are our historic rates?
That would be nice.
So are both of those approaches annual things that a parent can choose, doing the module or doing the affidavit?
Yeah, the submission will need to occur at the beginning of each for a non-medical exemption. The way I read that is that if you complete the certification, then it's not annual. This is
okay,
specific
so,
to for the non-medical exemption.
Okay, so doing the module will be a blanket for the kid throughout his...
No.
I think it says it's annual. Yeah, on an annual basis.
Oh. You're right. I failed to read
that
one. Like,
right. I could see the benefit in allowing that because then you're just, okay, I'm opting out for the rest of the education. But there's
I'd like an additional way out
there. I don't know.
So I just want to make sure I'm getting all the questions and language changes. So first off is better clarification to begin with on exactly what changed in the law that required these changes or would suggest these changes. What are our historic enrollment or immunization rates for the district? Are there other topics or questions that we'd like some clarification on for either of the two around immunization of students? The policy or the regulation?
They changed them. They just added local public health officials.
Wait, where is that?
It's on page one.
The second paragraph.
We clarified public health.
The specific use of the word public?
Yeah, it's a bit. Yeah. So
that's,
I was.
That's a good point there.
I'll ask.
That's one of the answers.
And to do that, submit them up to date. And I don't like that it says suspended or expelled at the bottom of that page.
Well, and what was it before? It made sense. Before it wouldn't make sense.
Right. So are we changing it from. Yeah. Right. What was it before? Was it that before? Obviously, it wasn't because it's in red.
I see what you say about the sentence. Before, so I'm trying to go back.
The last revision was February of 19. Well, they also got rid of the word war. So students who do not submit an up-to-date certificate of immunization they got rid of or, and that makes it to where you have to literally get a written authorization. There's no...
We're missing the original paragraph that we'd like to see. Because then it would make a little bit more sense for sure.
Should be less.
It says suspended before.
Just another admin level. So it just says suspended.
I'm pregnant. I'm pregnant.
Did you?
I'm pregnant. Oh, you could do that too if you want.
Sure. I'll turn this on. I think.
This one changed. This is the previous one?
Yes. And I think it said suspended, so my red might have
gone over
accidentally.
That reads right.
Okay.
Are you not giving me that?
That's okay. I got it right here.
I do. Okay. So I personally would like to leave with just in case something changes on their side of the form.
I agree.
So that it is in writing, so what for repeating ourselves?
Right, given another option anyways.
Right, and I don't like that we're saying we're being expelled, so not only will we need to suspend you, but we might expel you.
The state will ask us to expel them. They're removing kids from schools that don't have immunizations. I'm just saying.
I think that's a cool question. Reason.
Okay.
Again, what are we going to stand for? The Northridge, and what are
we? So, and the public health part too. Oh, yeah. I have a question about why are we having to put? Because it wasn't in here before, correct? Requesting local health.
Right now, it seems like we have quite a bit of questions and just some considerable work to bring back before we make any recommendations in regards to changes. So. Right now, where this is on the agenda is that it was a first read and revised policies, and so you've provided me with information to come back with in regards to the legal precedent that resulted in the change, historic immunization rates. Take a look at page 1 of JLCB and the use of the word public,
right,
and to bring back information on the suspended and expelled. And I also heard for JLCB-R, paragraph 3, reconsidering the striking of an exemption from immunizations based on a religious or personal belief, quote-unquote non-exemption, and can that just stay in there?
And that's still on JLCB. It's on JLCB as well.
Okay.
So we
want
to reflect on both.
Okay. Well, those are some of the answers and potential changes that I can bring back in the second.
Also, that third paragraph, it sounds like there's a list of three things.
Are you on which policy?
JLCB.
Just be okay.
Students who do not submit an up-to-date certificate of immunization, a written authorization signed by a parent, or a valid exemption. So to me, they're addressing three items that can be presented.
Which one are you looking at? The one that she just gave? No.
Yeah.
So this is the old one, though. This is the one that was from February 19.
Okay.
So
that's what we changed.
Right, no, we're looking, yeah, but this is the one that we're just, she printed this one to show what it was because we had that one.
Those bullets are still there, though. Those shouldn't have changed.
We don't have the bullets.
JLCB?
Yeah, we don't have the bullets on the 19.
Are you talking about these three bullets?
Yeah, but those were not on the original.
Right, so right. Okay.
So those should be red.
Those should be red.
Oh.
Yeah, because they're not in the original. They're in the original, it's just that they're in a paragraph form.
Mm, that's
right,
yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
I think that's what Craig, Director Blackwell, has been pointing out.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
All right, well, we've got quite a bit of work to do before bringing this back for a second read.
Okay, so then do we have any further questions in regards to JLCB or JLCBR? Okay, how about GDE, G, I'm so sorry. That was one no. I just went off. Are you?
Heather said no. We're moving along, please. Craig, do you have any questions on those two?
Well, how do we just wait till the second reading?
Right. We will still continue with roll call after this. The next one that we go over, we'll still continue with roll call, and then Bill and Kristen will work on the changes that we've had questions on.
Okay.
And define
them. Bring it back for another reading.
Right. Okay. So, anybody have questions in regards to JLCB or JLCBR? Those are the two we were just discussing.
And then I have questions on.
Let me go to that one in a second. So those two are done, correct? Okay. So then now let's move to the GDE, GDFR, Support Staff Recruiting Hiring Regulation.
I guess one thing that stood out to me here was an allegation. Allegation is puts the door wide open there. We can change this to undergoing legal action, but allegation.
That someone could anybody?
No. Ron looked at me funny. That's how I interpret. You know, I don't want to. I don't like the word allegation.
Right.
So if we can rephrase that, I mean, if there was an impending trial or something, then I would be like, okay, I'd be.
I understand a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
And that's under the background checks.
Well, what's important here is that it's the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. So it's that the Department of Education records shall indicate if the applicant has been convicted of, pled no, I guess, in the contest to or received a deferred sentence for a felony or misdemeanor crimes involving unlawful sexual behavior, mm-hmm. or an allegation of sexual act involving a student who is 18 years of age or older, regardless as to whether the student consent to the sexual act, unlawful behavior involving children, or domestic violence. So what it's actually saying is that that's the Colorado Department of Education's record, not our record. So the record we get from the Department of Education will contain all of that information. So prior to hiring and in accordance with the state law, the personnel office shall conduct a background check through the department, the Colorado Department of Education, the department, to determine the applicant's fitness for employment. The department's record, so the Colorado CDE, the Department of Colorado, Colorado Department of Education, their records shall indicate if the applicant has been convicted of or pled no contest or received a deferred sentence for a felony or a misdemeanor or crime involving unlawful sexual behavior, or if they have a report of an allegation of a sexual act involving a student who is 18 years of age or older, regardless as to whether the student consented to the sexual act.
Okay, so that's coming from the CDE.
So, but I will confirm that when we bring it back for a second read, just to make sure that my understanding and interpretation is correct before you vote.
Okay, great. Any other questions on that one, guys? Okay. May I have roll call, please?
Director Blackham?
So since we had to move to the motion, and then we had a second on it, and then we had our discussion, all of the information is Bill and Chris are going to take over on that. And then it's not a final reading. This is just the first reading. So now we need to close this out with roll call, saying that, yes, we're all, well, you say what you want, but finish it out with roll call, and then we go on to the next one.
No, I just meant, which one are we voting
on? All three. All three of those.
Okay, yeah, under 10.2.
Under 10.2, yes. Correct.
Perfect.
So basically, you're just closing the conversation on 10.2. Minus DEA is no longer in 10.2.
Right. That's when the board members are. Right. So. Are you questioned about something pertaining to these three?
So if I don't agree with one of them, that's where I state in the other name.
Correct. So we're still in discussion mode. So what is the question that you think that is?
No, I meant I'm not okay with how the first reading goes. So if that's the case, then I say no. Correct. I'm just asking how this works. I'm not asking.
No, right. No, yeah.
No, that makes sense. I get that. Go ahead.
You would still say yes because essentially you're closing. You're saying yes to we're no longer talking about these ones. We're moving on.
And yes, we've also asked him to follow up with those questions that we.
If it were a final read and you disagree with it, then you would say no. And so when we had the final read of the first one, the non-discriminatory equal opportunity one, then if you didn't agree with it, you would want to vote no.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So this is not the final. Yes. Okay. Are you good now?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody else? Yeah. All right. May I have roll call, please?
Dr. Blackham.
Aye.
Dr. Booth.
Aye.
Dr. Bronfeller.
Yes.
Dr. Olson.
Aye.
It kind of just comes back to where the board, in order to have this conversation, needs to, because we could take action, it has to be done in an open meeting. So.
Oh. Okay. So moving on to 10.3. Can I get a motion to approve the second reading of revised policies, ECAF? Which is the use of video and audio monitoring, and then ECAF-R, use of video and auto monitoring regulation. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any discussion?
Yes.
Okay.
I still have concerns about the use of audio. I'm worried about it being considered an invasion of privacy and making our students see stuff. There's also some legalities. The more you have, the more you're responsible for providing. So, those are my concerns on ECAF-R. That's one word I'm looking at.
Yeah.
ECAF-R.
And I'm also wondering why we're taking superintendent out. Like, I get we're putting safety and security director. Why wouldn't we also have superintendent in there?
I had some concerns about that as well.
Because
ultimately,
it
goes uphill.
Right.
So
the superintendent oversees all of it. So I feel like, yes, it can be, it should be both. However, it is the safety and security director mm-hmm. that works okay. underneath the superintendent, so he's doing his job pertaining to mm-hmm. the video and audio monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
So, put it in perspective, the superintendent is not, he oversees everything that,
mm-hmm.
The technology at HR, but they're doing their job. It's no different than the
sure.
safety director is doing his job.
But I think we have other policies that have superintendent. And principal school.
Well, you're looking at the word like here, number one, as approved. So that basically takes away, in my mind, it takes any approval away from the superintendent who puts it all under one person or whoever they designate.
I guess the question is why would we remove superintendent? Why wouldn't we have both?
Yeah.
All right. Just a question. Well, what was the. What was the thought process behind removing superintendent?
As my assumption is just because when the policy was originally implemented, we did not have a safety and security director that was involved in this work, and that it houses it with one kind of point of entry.
Do we want it? But I'm just saying, do we want to house something so
sensitive
to just one person? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is kind of already on that.
Well, I mean, it does say safety and security director or designee, and so we could, if it's your recommendation as a board, then we could adjust that language and include the superintendent.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So leave superintendent, and then as
or you could
by
say
the superintendent
leave it on five.
Act, safety and security
mm-hmm.
director.
Yeah. I like just having both of them.
Okay.
Because in 2017, I don't believe we had.
I don't believe so. I don't think so. At that point in time, it was like the mm-hmm. superintendent was the safety and security
right.
director. All the time.
And maybe since we now have it, it was just let's take superintendent out and have that position take that position, basically.
Right.
Yeah. Which
yeah,
makes sense.
That makes sense. Why?
But if we want to have should be nice stuff.
You can work on the wording.
Okay.
When we bring it back for a third.
And then is there any other questions? Okay, so that is something that will, because this is only first reading, or second reading, but we can,
there's
we'll
a third reading.
Right, there. Okay. There's a third reading.
Okay.
You know, where it says approval, I really think that the superintendent needs to be
okay. So what other questions do we have in regards to this?
So why did we take it from a minimum of 3 weeks down to 14 days?
That was a question that I had as well. My question for the video recordings, and Mike, maybe you can help us out with this a little bit, is you have on here that we store it for minimum from 3 weeks to 14 days. And then later on, under viewing requests, the written request for viewing may be made to the designated district administrator within 10 days of the date of recording. And then the following one after that, for number two, it says approval or denial for viewing may be made within 5 days. So those two timelines actually are, that's 15 days, but then yet the minimum for storing them is minimum, and I understand it's minimum, of 14 days. So
the time period has to reflect the lowest amount of retention for the district. So you can't say 21 days, and then if one server by chance only has 20 days. With Avigilon specifically, you only have increments of 1, 4, 7, 14, 21, 30, and infinite. Because this incorporates transportation as well, I have to take their servers and what they have and what their capacity is in consideration, which may be to fluctuate from 14 to 20 days specifically. But because we can't really give a ballpark, 14 days will cover everything. And in hindsight, the more analytics, obviously, you know, more cameras we had, the more analytics we had, the different tours that we put on cameras, all that takes into consideration data consumption, so it starts reducing our overall retention level. So the whole 10-day period is really just within 10 days. My guess is, unless it's a long weekend holiday, it shouldn't go over a 24-hour approval process to really review video, 48 hours, but it does cover that up to a buffer window. So it could be changed from 10 days to a 4-day approval window, if that makes sense, because it does kind of add up to a 14-day total timeline. But on that 15th day, all data would basically be wiped from that day one. So it's just a cyclical process, and it just continues to rewrite over the oldest video.
So on page 3, am I hearing that you would like to, that the board would like to consider making a change to either number 1 or number 2 when we're looking at the 10 days or the 5 days to bring it within 14 days?
Yeah, only because I think it's conflicting.
Yeah, that makes
sense. We say
a
minimum 14 days, and then we have 10 days, and then 5. I mean, I think if it's going to be the minimum of 14 days, I think they both should reflect up to the 14 days.
So no, that makes 100% sense.
So then should we say within
any ambiguity provided?
Leave the 10 days for the request, and then 4 days for the viewing, so then
14 for the total time period.
Right, so then it would be a total of 14.
Yeah.
If you were going to change something, I would recommend changing that because it puts the responsibility and onus on the district, not the person asking for it. So, like, if you were to change the 10 days down from the recording, that would make it more constrictive for a parent or a student. Whereas if we change the 5 days, it's keeping their 10 days protected, and it's putting an additional 1 day less of a turnaround time on our end.
Right.
Which I agree.
So moving that to the
Mr.
floor.
Doing that, exception of something really outstanding.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And as time goes on, obviously, funding bread and stuff, you know, we'd like to get that 14-day retention period up. But I said a lot of that comes to consideration with transportation as well.
Oh,
since it's all encompassing.
Total sense, yeah.
With transportation, too.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, and I thank you.
Yeah. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
4-5
to 4.
Yeah. Okay, and then, I'm sorry,
I still have concerns about the audio. Recording the audio. I know not a lot of people have the charge change. And I think we need to get some buy-in and some input on that.
For the audio?
For recording the audio.
Okay.
I think people could feel very uncomfortable about that. At least, you know, good input. put this policy in place to make it some opportunity.
Okay, so what is our option on that, for that you're suggesting?
Well, does this have to be, what's our deadline on this? Do we have a deadline on this? Can we get some feedback before we sign off on audio monitoring?
So, the word use, I would, one of the things I kind of want to make sure to anchor on here is the use of the word audio recording is delineating that we have cameras that are recording video and audio right now. It's not getting permission to record audio. Mm-hmm. But our cameras on our buses, our cameras in a number of locations are already recording audio. So that's one thing I want to make sure.
And it's posted.
It is. Okay. It is. So we're making sure as though the board policy, since it says use of video and audio monitoring, specifically calls out audio in the policy so that people, so we're trying to increase our transparency that the video system also reports audio. So some other possible considerations that we could make would be to look to even further inform our public, whether that be in staff handbooks or in student handbooks, or right now, we could look at the exact wording of our signage for like anyone coming into the building and make sure that it says like very clearly audio is being like it's part of our surveillance system. I don't actually know when I walk into a building right now what it says because I don't have it memorized, but those are some things that we can do. But the policy itself like is really the changes that are being asked are to try to do, I think what I'm also hearing are being asked for, which is to let everybody know that there are cameras on in our facilities that are recording audio and it's not just that have been.
It's important to take into consideration too. The audio recording is more for the evidence sharing purposes. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be actively monitored from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And the good thing about, you know, obviously our video surveillance system is you can throttle that who has rights to it. Mm-hmm. So not everybody in the district is going to have the ability to download, one, they don't have the ability to download video that has to go through the central office here for approval of the chain of custody, mm-hmm. as well as audio. And the audio specifically, you know, as Bill had mentioned, is, you know, directly impacts transportation and what they have on their buses as well. And school safety best practices over the last 5 years have evolved to the ability to audio monitor or to monitor audio to protect students and staff as well as community members as a whole from he said, she said situations. And it's not every camera in the entire district. It's specific cameras such as focal points, video door stations, the main entrance, where direct two-way audio is already taking place between staff members in the building as well as staff members, for example. But yeah, and, you know, as Bill mentioned, we will get updating signage, including it in different handbooks and stuff to go out to students and parents as well. And I think the big thing, too, as far as privacy as well, you know, schools are considered a public domain.
Yeah, I work
and
in one.
That's the hard thing when it comes to it as far as
and we do not report
rights, where it kind of teeters on that as far as what's the invasion of it, what's reasonable expectation of privacy in a public setting, and schools kind of land in the public domain as far as coverage being protected from single-party consent laws in Colorado.
So the way that has been brought forward to you right now is to highlight that our video surveillance systems are currently recording audio. Mm-hmm. So that's important for the people in the room to know and for the public to know as well. Now, I guess there was no now land. There was the end of that sentence, I guess. So right now, the way the video, like the way the board policy is written, is it uses the word, it uses the phrase video surveillance cameras, and it's, I guess the policy is written from, and it's written from 2017 to assume that audio surveillance, so that people understand that audio is part of the video surveillance. And right now what we're trying, which has been a practice of the district on our transportation in selected areas of the buildings, so right now what the policy is asking is to delineate that that includes the audio. If we wanted to have a conversation about like audio recordings, like that would probably be, it's a conversation we can have, but it's not what the intended purpose of creating this clarity within the board policy was. So.
So we've been audio recording all along. Just like
yes. Whereas it was, I believe that in when it was originally written in 2017, the writers assumed that a reader interpreted video surveillance cameras to include audio.
And now we're just specifying that it definitely is.
Yes, if we were to stop with audio recording, then it would be a change in practice and a change in policy. Mm-hmm. And certainly be able to have that conversation.
So any other questions on ECAF or ECAF-R? Okay, may I get roll call, please?
Dr. Lackham?
Aye.
Dr. Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Frumpod?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay, moving to 10.4. Can I get a motion to approve the disposition of district property, please?
So moved.
Any discussion?
Kind of a side note, Marcos did almost a Herculean job getting the new school board up amidst a lot of noise that could have been directed at him. And he did an upstanding job getting it done.
Absolutely.
I could go into more detail, but. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That was quite the feat.
Mm-hmm. We intended to bring Mark here to you today as we presented to writers, but he's actually on vacation right now.
Oh, so yeah.
We will bring Mark back to you at the next board meeting. We would be welcome. We'll be to our meetings.
Yeah. Don't be shocked if he doesn't want to show up for this.
Yeah, I know.
It's not his style, but yeah.
Okay, any other discussion? May I have roll call, please?
Dr. Lackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Dr. Frumpeller?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay, and then for 10.5, can I get a motion for the first reading of the new policy, DEA funds from local tax sources?
Second.
Any discussion, please?
I'm just assuming we're taking that out because kindergarten is already fully funded, so it's a non-issue.
Yeah, it's strange that it, because this is a brand new policy, so it's strange that it's got stricken out language in a brand new policy. But yes, this is a policy that we need to adopt, and it's written off of CASB's policy, but the kindergarten mill levy piece is no longer relevant, so we're striking that from the policy. So
that's a new policy, and they put that in there?
This is a new policy for us,
oh,
not for others. And so it really, it's more of a housekeeping item that we do need to have a policy. And I think the first couple of paragraphs there where it says the requested amount shall not exceed is one of the components that we need to have a policy for, because that's part of it.
Any other questions?
Dr. Bottom?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Frumpeller?
Yes.
Director Olson?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to 11.0. We don't have any discussion items.
So for technically for a discussion item, we need to have it in the agenda. So the public knows that we're discussing.
Can you bring it to the attention next time?
Yeah.
Or the next meeting? Can I have that?
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure you do that. Contact Carrie ahead of time so we can get it in
okay.
The agenda then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So our next meeting will be September 26th. Will everybody be present for that? Mm-hmm. Just to let you all know, I will be wiped out because it'll be 2 days after my daughter's wedding, but I will be here. Everybody else good for September 26th?
Yes.
And that's the one at 5, right?
I have it on the calendar from you at 5 p.m.
Yes, so the meeting will start at 5. I will not be here, but Jason has graciously offered to fill in for me.
Take a look at the team.
But it will start at 5.
Okay.
And you're good with that, Rhonda?
Oh, yeah. Oh. And Carrie will be back.
For sure.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Okay. And then we have no executive session. So with that, I will adjourn this meeting at 8:11 p.m.